Hi everyone, this is Diva from Bloodhunter, and you're listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast. I am your host, Blake, and this is the ultimate dive into the albums, bands that shaped metal and made it what it is today. Usually, but I'll get to that in a second. make sure you visit our website at the www.themetalpit.org, and you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, which is at the Metal Pit, and the podcast has its own website, which is www.themetalpitpodcast.com, and you can check out previous episodes if you maybe dare just catching on to us for the first time. And you can also, and it's also on Facebook and Instagram at the Metal Pit Podcast. And you can find us on YouTube at the Metal Pit 666, where we do have the audio version of the podcast as well, which I know some people listen there instead of Spotify or Apple or whatever. And if you want to email the podcast, please email me at podcasts@themetalpit.org in case you have any comments or album suggestions or whatever. And I actually got an email last week from somebody. I'm not going to read the whole email, but I'm just going to mention his name is Jamie. And he says, I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I listen on a weekly basis and I'm getting caught up on all past episodes as we speak. And we love hearing from the fans that we have, or I know we have a few because we got a few emails and we got a bunch of people. We've passed 20,000 episode downloads, not counting YouTube. So that's good. We're still growing. And I think people like him are finding us and then going back and listen to past episodes. And he wants to be a guest, and I think he will be a guest. He wants to do an Overkill album. So my guest tonight, Eric, he might want to join me on that one with him. Because you like Overkill.
I do.
Anyway, so I didn't introduce you. My guest is Eric, one of the writers at the Metal Pit. How you doing, Eric?
I am doing outstanding, Blake. And yourself?
Oh, I'm okay too, yes. What was I going to say? Oh, I was just going to say something. Epic. I was going to just say something. The word epic, you might want to count how many times that word comes up tonight in this podcast. And we're doing something a little different because usually we do a classic metal album. So I guess me and Eric are kind of going into the future and saying that this album will be a classic metal album, maybe in 10 or 20 years. Or if not, we're going to do it anyway. So we're doing an album that's not even released yet. It's coming out this week on Friday, February 7th, I believe is the date. And we're talking about the new Dream Theater album, which is called, oh my God, I didn't even write down the name. What's the name of the album?
Parasomnia.
Yes, that's right. I have it written somewhere. It's not at the top of my stuff that I'm reading off here at the start. Now, of course, I don't read everything on the podcast episodes. I just have guidelines for myself in case I forget something, and I still forget them anyway. But anyway, yes, we're going to talk about the new Dream Theater album, because if you check out our website, you can read an album review from one of our writers, who happens to be Eric, the one sitting right here, which is why he's on the podcast episode. And we're going to talk about the album. Now, I'm not sure how this podcast will do, because usually we're talking about a classic metal album, so people will see Iron Maiden or Metallica or Images and Words by Dream Theater, which me and Eric did a while ago. So this is an album that's not even out yet. So people have only heard, I guess, two songs from it so far, unless, of course, you work for a media outlet like us and have an advanced copy of the album. But anyway, we just thought it'd be different to do an episode on an album that isn't out yet. So that's why we're doing this, because we both love Dream Theater. Now, as I said just a minute ago, we did an episode already, so we might not go. I'll give a little bio on Dream Theater, but some of the stuff you might want to go listen to the other episode too, because this is mostly just going to be about the new album. But I will say, well, let's refresh. And we probably already said when we first heard Dream Theater, what was the first album? Images and Words, probably, right? For you,
it was Images and Words. You are correct,
and that would be the same for me. So I'm just going to briefly say, for anybody that doesn't know, of course, Dream Theater, American progressive metal band, except the singer is Canadian, but they were based in America, of course, United States. They met, of course, in 1985 at Berkeley. Well, they didn't all meet at Berkeley College, but that's where they originated with, Petrucci, bassist Mayong, and drummer Mike Partney, as I guess they were all going to the school at the same time, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and they used to be called Majesty when they started, but they changed their name to Dream Theater, of course. And let's see, they're probably the best, I don't know, one of the best progressive metal band ever. I don't know, like you could count Rush. I don't know if some people probably wouldn't say Rush is metal, but they're kind of in, I know Dream Theater is probably influenced by Rush and many other groups. But they're, let's see, their breakthrough came in 1992 with Images and Words, the first album that we heard, and we probably heard Pull Me Under or seen the video of it, and that's probably why we got into it. And of course, they had the following albums, 1994, they had Awake and Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from Memory in 99, 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence in 2002, and they kind of grew from there. And this is they're going to be their 16th. Is that correct? Did I read that right? Album?
I think you are correct.
Yeah, 16th yep. studio yep. album.
It's hard to believe.
Yes. Oh. I would say that I haven't listened to the last few studio albums that much, and those were featuring Mike Mangini on the drums. And that's not why I didn't listen to it. I would listen to it, but I just never got into it as much as I did the older stuff. And of course, we know that former drummer Mike Partney is now back in the band, so it's a resurgence of the group. And I was reading, where was I reading that? Somewhere that, or maybe it's right here. Oh, I guess it was in Wikipedia, yeah, where they said about recording the album and Mike Partney. I guess he didn't talk to James LaBrie for like 11 years or something like that.
It said. Ooh, wow.
But they realize they're getting older and, you know, they don't want it to be a Pink Floyd situation or whatever, or Peter Gabriel, a Genesis situation where, mm-hmm. you know, fans want to see them together again or whatever. So they reconciled. I have no idea why they wouldn't have stopped talking to each other or anything like that. It doesn't say anything like that here, but this is definitely one of the most highly anticipated albums of 2025, I would assume, for at least the progressive metal fans out there. And I'm sure for both of us, and it comes early in the year for us here in February. So what are your, and like I said, Eric wrote a review, so you can go read that review on our website, but I'm sure some of those points are going to come up in this episode. let's see here. So.
Hey, Blake, can I recommend something yes, to you real quick?
You go ahead. Yes.
Before we hit the ground running. So there's one, since you haven't listened to their last few albums, the one I'm gonna recommend, it's back from 2011, so maybe you listened to it a little bit, but A Dramatic Turn of Events. It was the first album with Mike Mangini. It's really heavy, and there's some great songs like Build Me Up, Break Me Down is just a stunning song, and Breaking All Illusions I think is actually one of their best songs. So I recommend that one to you and to anybody that remotely likes progressive metal.
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of me. I don't know what I don't know if I was getting into other things or if I wasn't getting into anything. And so I just didn't give it a whole listen and really get into it. Because I think sometimes you do need a few listens to get into a Dream Theater album.
You're right.
I've only listened to this one a couple times because you wrote the review, and I know you listened to it a lot more. You wrote the review for the website. So I listened to it a couple times just for the podcast thing. But so I know sometimes, especially when you have songs, long songs like Dream Theater tends to do, and which we will find out about this new album does, you know, it takes a while sometimes to get into it. It's not like your quick 4 or 5 minute, you know, thrash songs by a thrash group where it hits you right in the face right away. Sometimes it takes a while and to get into a 9 or 10 or 20 minute song. So let's start on, there's 8 tracks on the album. 2 are instrumental, I guess. One's kind of like an intro to another song, but we're starting off with an instrumental starts off the album, Why didn't I write that? Sorry, I didn't write the whole length of the title of the song. It's In the Arms. Damn it. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry, I just lost my.
And the arms of Morpheus.
Yes, why didn't I thought I did write that down. Yes, In the Arms of Morpheus. So this is the intro. So what do you think of this first? It's like 5 minutes long intro, instrumental.
Yeah, you know what? I had heard, well, I had read that John Petrucci was going to play an 8-string guitar on the album. He uses it only on one track, but it's on this opening instrumental track, and it starts off kind of like a little bit kind of quiet, a little bit of eerie, and then bam, that 8-string kind of comes out and just it's like a sledgehammer over your head, but I guess in a good way, if that were possible. But it's like borderlines, it's noisy and kind of just like dissonant. But then you hear Portnoy's rolls, just these rapid fire rolls, and I'm like, yes, he is back. And the rest of the band members come in there, and it's a great tension filled song. He's got this great Petrucci has this great triplet feel riff, and the band members are kind of feeding off of that. And Rudess obviously always adds some cool melodies to it. And then it morphs into this something like really melodic kind of song. Well, it goes into like a keyboard solo. It's a little bit, kind of mysterious, but then it opens up. It's more melodic, and then it kind of chunks out. And then Petrucci does this thing, and Mae Young, and everybody sounds great in it. Obviously, James is getting ready to do his Night Terror thing. But yeah, it's a very cool opening track. I was pretty happy to see DT start an album off with an instrumental once again.
And I get this is I guess we're saying this is a concept album. I believe it is anyway. It's a lot about, well, of course, the title, Paris Song.
The lyrics that's the one thing I just kind of briefly mentioned in my review. Typically with my reviews and even podcasts, since I've been playing guitar over 30 years, I feel like the music is always kind of like that's my forte. I typically don't delve too deep into the lyrics. I figure I can let other people do that. But a lot of the lyrical ideas are similar. They're about like sleep disorders, sleep paralysis. There is one incident which I'll cover about over the song "Dead Asleep," where there was an actual incident that happened by a sleepwalker. But they are interrelated to sleep troubles and sleep disorders. So it's not per se a concept album. But lyrically, they are have relative. They're all about like sleep issues,
Yeah.
you know.
And like it starts off like a concept album with the first, like there's some street noises and there's sirens going off. And there's kind of, before the music kicks in, there's kind of some Pink Floydish kind of. That's
Very,
what I was thinking. I was hearing the
very
walls in
Floydy.
my head for a few seconds as with their stomping kind of thing before the music kicks in. But
And
yeah.
then some of the themes, you're right. And then some of the musical themes are introduced, and then they'll come back and diff other tracks, which definitely lends it to feeling like a full-on concept album. And it definitely is loosely a concept album. But it's funny you mentioned Pink Floyd because I didn't want to start that off in the review, so I mentioned it later on in my review. But that you can't help but think about Floyd, and there are other influences, but that was like a big one on this album where you could hear it in different places.
Yeah, and we know that Dream Theater was big Pink Floyd fans. I think they did, didn't they do a probably did one of the covers album of Pink Floyd songs or something. I remember hearing a bunch of Pink Floyd songs by
They
them.
did on the Change of Seasons, they covered some Floyd.
Yeah, they had a medley, I think, of Floyd songs. And I was gonna say, oh, the one thing that we didn't, I didn't, the lyrics, the promo that we got for review purposes, there was no lyrics. Sometimes there's lyrics, but one thing about listening to James LaBrie and Dream Theater is, of course, you can understand everything he's saying. It's not like if you get a death metal album or maybe a thrash metal album where it's like, oh, I need the lyrics so I can understand everything that's going on. So you don't really need the lyrics. It's just that, of course, I'm not typing down all the lyrics as he sings them, but it's nice that you can hear what he's saying. Okay, then we go into track two, which of course covers what we're just talking about. And then the song is called Night Terror. And this is the first single of the album. And it's kind of unusual to have a single that is as epic as this. 9 minutes and 55 seconds. I don't really suppose this got played on your top 40 radio stations, if there is any top 40 radio station anymore. But so what do you think of the first single, Night Terror, which of course has a video too that people have probably checked out?
I was pretty excited about it the first time I heard it. And you know, it's one of those things, again, I mentioned this in the review, but like you can hear early on, like Mike Portnoy's influence, like on the band and his contributions. And it definitely has this like eerie kind of vibe to it with these soft guitar chords and a little bit of talking and whispering in the background. But then they kick in and you're like, oh, this is Dream Theater. It's dark. You know, it's definitely one of the darker DT albums, you know, this and like Train of Thought. But, you know, you can tell the band and the chorus is actually very melodic. The verses are awesome. There's a lot of chugging, a lot of riffing. I love the double time, you know, that they kick into with the double bass. But like Petrucci's riff, he's using this synthetic. It's this really unique, exotic scale. He just kicks into these single notes. And man, I love it. And then he takes a similar like motif or like theme, that idea, and he drops down an octave, and that's what LaBrie sings over. And then, you know, it's just the song kind of goes from there, opens up. And it's funny because even in the review, as great as the soloing is, like it's a complete song. And I don't think of it as a single. I'm like, okay, this is the first song I heard. The video is pretty neat. I listened to it a few times. I am similar to you, where I don't like to listen to a song too much because I want to appreciate the album as a whole. So I probably only listened to it maybe 4 times, but I liked it. And this track, more so than any of the other songs, this would not be out of place on Black Clouds and Silver Linings from 2009. It has that feel. The solo section is a little bit different, but you know, they kind of open it up a little bit, but it's really cool. You know, you can hear Portnoy stamp on it, but LaBrie sounds like really on top of his game this whole album. That's part of the reason I end up giving this album some high marks.
And he sounds like, he doesn't sound like he's lost anything in his voice, which
not at all.
You get sometimes with singers, especially singers, because it's your voice and you're getting older and they're getting older, but like the whole band sounds great, of course, too, with the music, and nobody seems to have lost anything. And yes, it is like you said, it is kind of, it comes off as a, if you only hear that song, like hear the first single, you do think it's going to be a heavier, darker record than some of their past ones have been. Not that they haven't still had their heavy moments, of course. But, and of course, that song is 19. Oh, and actually, it says this is the first song that they wrote together when they got back together, I guess. This was the first one that they wrote. And it says you can hear the excitement of what it was like to have Mike back in the band. And you know, it's going to be a heavier record just because of this track. When you hear this track, there's really not, I don't really think there's any song on this album that could really be a real single. There's no Pull Me Under on here where it's just a basic, I mean, no, Pull Me Under is a great song, but you know, it's got the chorus thing where.
Yeah, it's got the hook to it, you
I
know.
I think there's, and there's all long, of course, like.
Yeah, like even, you know, shortest, what's funny.
But, sorry, go what's ahead.
What's funny, Blake, is now you're right. And I didn't, I don't have the track list. I have the track listing in front of me and I actually know the track listing. I don't see that. Do you know what the time is on Bend the Clock? Like that could possibly be a single. It's a ballad.
Well, it's seven. It's almost 7.5 minutes
see,
too.
Yeah, and I thought it was. Messiah, I thought it was too long. It's minutes. Too long for like for I guess a quote unquote single. But I mean, Dream Theater's as you yeah, can tell, they don't. Not, they could get a rat's ass. They know their fans, you know. So
yeah, we don't need no singles. But I mean, nope. it's just it's funny. You'd think somebody would tell them, well, you got to put in 1 4-minute song that we can play on. Whatever, I don't know, but what's the difference anymore now?
Yep.
Spotify anyway or whatever.
it's their most accessible song, but again, like you said, I knew it wasn't 5 minutes long. I knew it was longer. So yeah, break yeah. 7 minutes, as you said. So I guess not true single, I guess, you know, corporate material, but again, they can get away with it. They're so established, yeah. And they have their devoted fans like you and I and many others.
Yes. And I like Long Song, that we've mentioned before.
We do. Yes.
Too. And so, like, this is a good album for people that like long songs. So let's see. I think that's all I had for that one. Yeah, let's go on to the third track, A Broken Man. And this is an 8.5 minute song. And I'll let you start every song, I guess. So what do you think of this one?
Well, what's funny about this, Blake, I don't know if you ever have any like preconceived notions about what you think a song's going to sound like by the title. I guess it kind of goes back to judging a book by its cover. You should never do that. Mm-hmm. But I just saw the title and it's the second single. And I was like, wow, that, you know, that sounds like it's probably going to be a ballad. And then I played it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is really heavy. And it's dissonant. They're playing this diminished chord and they're just like Petrucci's like Portnoy's doing in my own. They're doing these accents. And I'm like, holy hell, this is pretty intense. Where's it going to go from here? Obviously, this isn't a ballad. And then they just kind of run into it. And it's very repetitive, but it never gets boring. I mean, it's dream theater after all. But then they start moving the same. It still has the same rhythmic feel, has like this 5-4 feel. But then they're moving it around in different chords. And I was like, oh, man, I was like, wow, if we thought Night Terrors was dark, this thing is just like a whole another level. And it covers PTSD. So it has this like uneven feel to it, which, you know, would make sense if somebody's experiencing something as awful as that. But all the verses are super heavy. And honestly, I mean, LaBrie does great, but I could honestly hear somebody doing like Phil from Pantera or like even more aggressive vocals over the verse. It's so brutal. Like if you listen to just the guitar part, and the drums, there's so much like vigor and attitude there. But LaBrie does good. I mean, he just keeps it kind of more in his mid-range, lower range, you know. But the chorus is cool. The guitar kind of moves up a little bit. And the piano parts like really kind of captivate you. If you put your earbuds or headphones on, there's a lot you can pick up on. I don't want to say too much. I want the listeners to go out and experience it. But it's even better with headphones. I was at the gym and I was almost kind of in a trance. But yeah, you just kind of get lost in it, like listening to some of these songs with your headphones or earbuds. But yeah, it's a great song. It's one of my top three off the album. The solo section really kind of, it threw me off a little bit, but in a good way, because like the Jordan Rudess, so the keyboard solo starts off and I think it's like a nod to John Lord from Deep Purple. And you know Deep Purple much better than I do. Mm-hmm. I respect what they've done. I can't say I'm like a real fan. I like some of their songs, but you can hear some of those kind of jazzy, fusion-y influences that Purple's done over the years. You hear it in Rudess's playing. And then Petrucci goes on to this kind of almost a Southern rock kind of like the Dixie Dregs, like a Steve Morris. These kind of bluesy, jazzy, quick runs, and it's tasteful. It's really good. It's not something like your quote unquote metal bands are going to try to do, but that's Dream Theater. That's what separates them. They're showing some of their versatility, and it's catches you. You know, it's definitely a curveball, or you kind of get that right hook. You're like, where'd that come from? But it sounds great. They make it work. That's what kind of blows me away. I'm like, I've been playing guitar very long. You and I have been listening to music for many, many years. And you're like, there just aren't many bands that would even risk trying something like this. But not only do they do it, they pull it off like flawlessly. And it sounds great. And it just kind of shows like another side of the band. Like, even though it's a really heavy song, they're tuned down a whole step and it's got a lot of oomph to it. They still show, hey, we can do other things too and mix it up. And then it kind of comes back and it ends on a super, really bludgeoningly heavy, heavy vibe. And I love what Portnoy's doing with some of the toms at the end. It sounds great. Really fits the attitude of the song. Did you like this song very much, Blake? You like it at all?
Yeah, like, and you made a good point about the, if you do read the title, Broken Man, especially after listening to Night Terror, you do think, well, this is probably a ballad. You're right. I never thought of it before. I do sometimes, like you mentioned it, like the next one, we'll get to that in a second. But the next one, I read the title and you think, okay, that's going to be heavy, probably. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, you do think that. But yes, it's not a ballad or anything, of course. There's no, like, there's even the ballad on this album isn't really a full ballad. But again, we'll get to that when we get there. Great. Yeah, the song, and I wrote down that 6 minutes in, you get like a jazzy breakdown. So I'm glad you brought up the jazz thing. So it wasn't just me being weird here.
Yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, you're right.
I know they are. And of course, Deep Purple's another influence. And like they even, Deep Purple released their live album, Made in Japan, not to be confused with Iron Maiden's Made in Japan. Which, of course, they also took the name from Deep Purple. But Dream Theater did one of their, they did the whole Deep Purple album live in concert for their own fans too. And it's pretty cool. If you haven't heard it, make sure you go look that up. Cause
I need to check it out real quick. I really enjoyed their cover of Perfect Strangers, and I do like the original too. I like them both.
But yeah, that has all the old stuff on it. Smoke on the Water, Highway Star, Lazy or whatever, but it's great. It's not, I mean, I knew Dream Deep Purple before Dream Theater, of course, so it doesn't beat Deep Purple's version, of course, but it's a great tribute to them to do it too. Okay, then we go to, let's see, was I done in that? Oh yeah, and like you said, that song was about PTSD, and I think James wrote the lyrics to this song, or at least most of it, and it's supposed to be the perspective of a combat veteran who has PTSD and is, yeah, and the trauma experience from being in battle, which is a common thing, I guess, for people that have fought in wars and stuff, or for the military. Okay, now track number four. Now the title of this song is called Dead Asleep, and usually a song that has the word dead in it, if it's a heavy metal band, it's probably a heavy song. And this is, let's see, a little bit, another epic song. 11 minutes and 6 seconds. So how do you like Dead Asleep?
So listening to the album from beginning to end, you know, like you said, this is track four. This is the one that like really grabbed my attention. I was just like, you're listening to it and you hear some talking again, and it has that kind of like Floyd concept album kind of vibe to it. And then you hear this, like, I described it in the review as a shuffle. I don't know if technically you want to call it a shuffle, but they go into this like triplet feel, but it's mellow. Like you can hear like the bass, just the bass is subtle, but like the piano, then the guitar part's on clean, but it's really deep. And you hear him kind of going into it. And then all of a sudden, it, you know, it does this kind of shuffle-like vibe to a triplet feel. And I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. Where's it going to go? And then out of nowhere, you hear this like baritone come in, like full on, you know, does it go to 11? And I'm like, oh my God, I was listening to that actually exercising. And when you have the AirPods, whatever you're listening to, and it crushes you, and the band comes in. And as soon as you think you have the feel, they add these two extra beats. So then it's odd time. And it's like, oh wow. Okay. That kind of catches you off guard. And then Petrucci kicks on this cool phase effect only for a few bars. But I'm like, wow, that's who would have thought of that? And I was like, okay, you know, Petrucci. But, you know, the verses are cool. The verses are good. Real quick about the lyrics kind of, I was listening closely to the lyrics. It's about a sleepwalker who unknowingly kills his wife, who he believes it's somebody who broke into their home and attacked him. He got cleared of all charges because he actually wasn't conscious of it. I don't know how like legally they determine that, but he was like petrified when he came to because he saw all this blood and he sees his wife, which you think about it, it's a real life, like it's a situation that happened. And how horrific would that be? But it, you know, this incident happened to the guy. But this is a brilliant song, man. It's a great song. It's got so much oomph to it. Great guitar playing. Everybody's really, really kind of, they find their groove. And I wouldn't have known it was an 11 minute song if you wouldn't have said it. You know, it's like one of those songs. I listened to it. I'm like, should I hit it on repeat? Should I go back and play it again? I was like, no, I'll go ahead. And it transitions right into Midnight and the Messiah. I was like, I'll go ahead and listen to that one now. But it's a really cool song, man. There's some really, really great soloing in it too. I just love how he breaks out this baritone guitar, so it's tuned down on a, it's a half step below a seven string, so it's really deep, and it really fits the lyrics well, and it's definitely, I would say, like, the whole album. I will give the Metal Pilgrim some credit. He's on YouTube. He's got a lot of followers. But I thought this, but he said it out loud, that, like, this album, it's really a metal album with progressive influences. It's not like they tried to be, hey, let's make this progressive and go from there. Like, you could tell there's a lot of bite to this album. And then they use some other progressive influences throughout the songs. They sprinkle them in, and it really, they execute it well. It never feels like they're trying at all, which you can't say that on, like, an album like Octavarium or something else, where it's like, okay, maybe they're trying a little too hard on this song or that song. With this album, it's metal first, and then, oh, we're going to go ahead and sprinkle in a dash of progressive influences here with some cleaner guitar parts, or this, like, synth part here, you know, or some softer, calmer moments here, or an odd time signature here. It works very well. Did you like this tune, Blake?
Yes, I would. Yeah, I like them all, but you made a good point about what that other guy said on that, his thing about, yes, it is definitely the heaviest album they've had in a while, where, you know, but it also, I mean, it's 73 minutes, I think, long, which is long, but I think they've even had albums longer than that, and they've thrown in more ballads and stuff like that. And even going back to, like, their fourth album, it wasn't just one ballad, it was two or three ballads, or at least parts of songs or ballads, but definitely seems like they kept it pretty heavy for the most part on this album anyway.
No kidding.
I like the pinch harmonics on there too, which, yeah, I know, like, Zakk Wylde probably appreciates that.
Oh yeah.
And lots of heavy riffing there from Petrucci. And apparently this was based on a true events. Now, I don't know if it's exactly based on the true story where he did get acquitted. Maybe Mulder and Scully got him off because they heavy nose.
nice twist, yeah.
And if anybody doesn't know who Mulder and Scully are, you're obviously under 40 or 30, maybe. I don't know. I'm
like, maybe 35, yeah.
But yes, this could have been an X-File, but I'm not sure. Anyway, but yeah, it's a great song, and it's one of my favorites, but we'll get to that at the end. Then we go to, well, I guess this would be on the second shortest track, not counting the instrumentals, but we got Midnight Messiah. And this is kind of a heavy one. Also, just like we just said, this is heavy. It's heavy for the most part. So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, this is a really neat tune. It starts off with these like clean arpeggios on the guitar, and then it really kicks into you know, something I mentioned on the review, how they go into this really cool, like, heavy single note groove, and then, like, Rudas kind of fills out the gaps with some neat little, like, melodies and stuff and sounds, samples a little bit. But the one thing I really took away with this song, and I want to say off the top of my head without looking at the review, but this song, probably out of all eight, I wrote not the least amount, but probably the second least amount of material on this song. And it's very worthy. It's worthy of a listen. It's a great tune. The chorus is kind of what I came away with. It has a nice, like, catchy chorus, but it's like thrashy though. It has this, like, double time feel to it. I mean, it's something like, if you take James's vocals out, just focusing on the music, it's like, wow, like, this could be, you know, like, definitely a thrash, maybe a more modern, like, thrash, kind of even a mellow death, like, chorus. But then, you know, obviously James comes in and he does a good job. It fits well. And I really like how it flows. It's got some great riffing on it. It gets right to the point too. It's not one of these, like, longer choruses, which they can do and get away with in other bands too, but it really kind of cuts to the chase, and it's delivered well. I like the speed. I like, you know, the tempo is awesome for the chorus. That's my favorite part of this song, believe it or not, is actually the chorus on this tune. You like this tune at all, Blake? Or you actually, you're saying it's heavy, so you like it.
It's actually I guess this is the third single. It must have just came out.
It is.
I just looked it up on Spotify there because I was going to look at something. Okay, so I don't know if you heard
it just
this.
Dropped it this past week.
Okay, I don't know if you heard this, but I think it's near the, I guess it's not necessarily in the song, but they say the line, "It's calling me back to my home." Have you heard that line before?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, because I heard that when I listened to it the first time. I heard that and go, hey, that's from the song Home on Metropolis. Scenes from Part two, yep. Right?
Scenes from a memory. Exactly.
Yeah. So they brought, not sure the reason. I don't know if we'll hear that sometimes in an interview or something, but why they did that. But so they say the same line that they said in that song Home from that album. So I just thought that, I was just looking that up to make sure it wasn't crazy. But it's the exact same line. Anyway, yes, I like the song. Again, like I said, it's fast and heavy for the most part. So, of course, I like it. Petrucci solos. Like, I've always loved the band, like, music, everything. Like, and that's another thing when, I guess we'll get to it even more with the longer songs. But whenever, because I've seen Dream Theater a bunch of times, and I know you've seen them a bunch of times. So whenever you're listening to a song and you hear a big break where there's no singing, you can just picture, okay, James just left the stage and he'll be back in 5 minutes. As long as he still does that, because I'm sure he was like, what am I supposed to do here for 5 minutes while they're playing? So he just leaves and lets them play. But anyway, I just bring that up. Okay, but yeah, that's a great song. I love that song too. And what was and that's also about dreaming and stuff. But, and speaking of dreaming, we're going to get to, now they're really sure, a minute and a half instrumental, Are We Dreaming, which is, it's just I guess it's the intro to the next song, or maybe it doesn't have anything to do with that. I don't know, but it's only a minute 28. We don't have to say much about it. Do you want to say anything about it?
Kind of like I told you right before we popped onto the podcast here, it's just, I think, like you said, I mean, it's like a transition to the next song. It's got, you know, it's got some nice, like a nice major chord progression by Jordan Rudess, but again, it feels more like kind of a transition into the next track.
Yeah, so there's some ethereal voices in it or whatever, and it's just speaking to the traumatic events during sleeping as we work to distinguish reality from dream. This goes back to the other song about thinking he was being robbed and killing his wife by accident or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is a great alibi. So we can, whoever, anybody out there, remember this moment. But don't go kill your wife.
No.
Or have robbers in your house. Okay. Then we go to mostly a ballad, I'll say, Bend the Clock. And this is 7.5 minutes. And what do you think of this one? I think we mentioned it briefly already.
Yeah, this is one of the tracks that, you know, it kind of hit me the first time I listened to it. I was like, okay, here's the ballad. And I was like, well, it's not the usual tone. It's not like, it's not an acoustic guitar. It's not full on clean. It's just like a little bit of a dirty kind of tone. But I was like, yeah, I like the vibe of it. Piano comes in after Petrucci has, you know, the nice intro. LaBrie sounds, this is one of, I think this is probably his, this is one of his best songs on the album for sure. And as you said, his voice is in tip top shape. I really like the song. When it kicks into that kind of more rocking part, that dun 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 dun, it reminds me just a little bit of something maybe on the second disc of 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence. It has a little bit of that vibe, yet it's still fresh and new. Might even be more just kind of the tempo, a little bit of the feel. But I kind of like what they did there. And man, the chorus is super memorable. James sounds great. And I guess, honestly, as much as I love the vocals, I feel like at the end, it's kind of a comfortably numb, sorry, Pink Floyd, but it's almost like a comfortably numb, like outro solo. And the song ends on a solo with Petrucci starting off with some very emotional, these great bends and some nice vibrato. The rest of the band's playing off him really well. Portnoy has some just perfectly timed fills, and he doesn't overplay at all. I'm sure some drummers might argue, but it really, to me, it fits the song well. I do my best to listen to all instruments, especially when I'm using my earbuds or headphones. But that Petrucci solo at the end, wow. And he just ramps it up, and he just goes in this very dramatic, these Floria notes, and it works great in the song. I mean, it is a ballad, but he really lets it rip about the last maybe minute or so of the song. And then the song fades out. And I was like, you know what? I think that's the best way to end the song. And I was like, you know, you don't want to just end on a chord or end on like just a bend. Just keep it going. And I was like, yeah, that's perfect. So Petrucci keeps doing his thing, and the band just kind of exit stage left, if you will. And then it transitions into quite an epic. Great tune, man. Great, great ballad. You know, I don't seek out ballads, but I really like this one. It's one of their best ballads in the last decade, maybe the last 20 years, in my opinion.
Well, whenever I hear James singing a ballad, of course, I mean, The Spirit Carries On went into my head for a second when I first hear him singing a line. Maybe a
good tune. Yeah.
But yeah. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
One of their best ballads, but or emotional ballads anyway. But yeah, I'm never a big lyric or a big ballad fan. I mean, sorry, but I still like the song, and yeah, it has this heavy moment still. So it's not just a straight out Spirit Carries On ballad. It has its moments. And I guess the lyrics for this are kind of about if you could turn back the clock, or bend time as it's called, and experience life without these nighttime terrors or traumas, would life be better? Is kind of what the vibe of that is. And before we get to the last song, the short one, the one that finishes it, I was just looking on Spotify. We were talking about the singles, and like, so I guess I do have radio edits for the song, like Night Terror.
I listened to it a few days ago. It's good.
So like Night Terror has a 6 minute track, and Midnight Messiah it's down to 5.5 or 5 minutes and 30 seconds, I think. So I guess I'd have to check those out to see what they removed.
I didn't listen to the Night Terror, the radio edit, but the Midnight Messiah, believe it or not, it's almost sacrilege, because the intro is cool with the clean guitar. Uh-huh. Pardon me. But I actually like the radio edit. At least they do trim some more of the song later. But I like it just kicks right into that single note groove, and it's heavy. I kind of like how it starts off without something like the soft, because a lot of the songs, as you know, on this album start off slower. I like how it just kicks right in. It just kicks the door right mm-hmm. in. That aspect of it, I like a little bit better than the original. But you'll have to go check them out. I'll have to check out the Night Terror radio, because yeah, I didn't never got around to listening to that one yet.
Yeah, I didn't realize they had that. So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. So I guess there is something for radios if they want to play it, but I'm sure they don't really care. Okay, then we finish off the album, track 8, with a, dare I say, another epic. Okay, this is a 19 and a half minute song here. The Shadow Man Incident, which sounds like an X-Files episode title.
It sure does.
That again, but... And probably the story does too, but I'll let you go. So what do you think of this 19-minute track?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be Dream Theater without closing an album with a lengthy, bombastic epic. And they deliver on this one. It makes me kind of, I think of like how like Illumination Theory, which is off the self-titled album. It kind of, you know, makes me think of like a long song like that. I love the long epic closing tracks. I mean, go all the way back to Learning to Live, which, newsflash, that's going to be in my top 10 songs of Dream Theater. Yeah. This one's a lot to digest. This one actually starts off with a pretty heavy riff. It's a little bit different for Dream Theater. I got to say, it has... I won't say Black Sabbath, but it has a different kind of, I mean, just dark again. You don't want to abuse the word, but it definitely comes out with this darker kind of single note vibe. But it definitely morphs. It goes through a lot of different changes. And I love how they just start off. And again, they're one of those bands, they're not afraid to play for, you know, 5-6 minutes before the vocals come in. Mm-hmm. And then the verses are pretty neat. I did get a little bit impatient my first listen, but I was like, okay, come on, verses, let's get it over with. But, you know, you tell me what you think, Blake. I feel like the verses, after I listened to it maybe 3 or 4 times, the verses have a kind of 70s feel to it. Do you get that vibe at all? Like 70s progressive rock, like a little bit of Kansas, yeah. Rush, maybe a little bit of Yes, but...
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that does creep in. And I like the drumming, the military kind of style.
That's really cool.
He was doing there at the start of the song, or near the start of the song, I should say. And it's funny, I was reading, I can't remember who said this because I didn't leave that in my notes, but somebody in the band, I think it was Portney, but he said, "We had planned to write an epic for this record." And I'm thinking, well, what does he think these other songs are? So I guess this is the epic. I guess he's saying this is the epic because it's the longest, maybe, is what he's saying. But I just found that funny when I was reading it, thinking, what about your 10 and 12 minute songs or whatever? What are those short ones? Anyway.
I think those are the warm-ups, you know.
Yes. But see, this is a band, I think, I don't know, maybe you could say this, but a band that, like this, with this album or even with other albums, you wish you could go to the concert and just see them play, even though you love all the classics that they have before, but you would like to hear this whole album played first and then hear the old songs instead of just like groups usually do, throwing a song in and out. So I don't know what they're going to do on their tour, but would you agree with me that you would love to be able to hear the whole album in its entirety?
I do, and I have a little bit of news for you. I caught an interview with Mike Portnoy. I'm giving the Metal Pilgrim one more plug, but it was a 20-minute interview. You definitely should check it out. I sent it to you a little while ago.
Yeah.
Portnoy said that they actually do planning after this tour. I'm going to catch them in March 21st in D.C. This one, I'm sure, will have a variety of songs. But Portnoy said that their next tour, they plan to go out and perform this album from beginning to end. So I was really excited to hear that. So I think that's one that we should both check out. I don't know if they'll be in Canada next year, but, you know, that could be, I could come up there and catch it with you if the stars align.
Well, they are in Canada this year. I just don't remember if it's, I think it's February. I think it's this month, maybe.
Okay.
Or maybe it is March.
I knew it was before. Yeah, I thought it was like early to mid-March. I thought it was a little bit before they came to D.C. Okay. And Toronto, probably, right?
It's March.
Then. Toronto, yes. Yeah.
Is it Toronto? I think it's, well, it's, they call it Toronto, but I think it's Mississauga, actually, I think.
Okay.
It's part of Toronto, I guess. But anyway, going back to the song, yeah, I like the song because I always love my long songs, like we've already mentioned. And, you know, it's like an orchestrate. It's like you're watching, you know, a movie or listening, I guess I should say, to a movie and all the stuff, bringing all this dream thing. And, of course, it ends with the line, "Wake up," at the end of the song when you think the album's over. And, of course, and that's all you hear. So maybe he was dreaming the whole album. Whatever. Again, we'll have to, because they didn't really say in the press release if it was necessarily a concept album, but it kind of, I don't know, it kind of sounds like it is, or if it's maybe just like you, where every song is about the same thing, but we'll see what they say.
Yeah, and the one thing I wanted to mention, because I could talk about the Shadow Man incident for half an hour, but I will not bore the listeners. It's definitely worthy of checking out for sure. The choruses are actually kind of almost like happy. They're very melodic, but what's cool is Petrucci is like chugging along on his 7-string, but Rudis kind of brings out some of the melodies along with LaBrie. So again, you can see that the chemistry that the band has, they really play off of each other very well. And as you said, that instrumental section, I didn't clock it, but I'm sure it's around 5 minutes, maybe even a little bit longer, but the middle section, That's when it almost seems like it's a different song. They go into a multitude of key changes and some tempo changes. And you'll find some of the best soloing by John and Jordan both. They'll take your breath away and then some. There's even a section where my young's doing some really cool. I don't know if he's tapping in there, but he's doing. There's a really cool like bass line he's got going. It's steady. I wouldn't say it's a bass solo, but it you can hear he's kind of in the spotlight and just the way his tone sounds. It's really cool. Him and Portnoy are doing something together. It's syncopated. It sounds awesome. But and again, LaBreed comes back in. Chorus just really soars. And yeah, you think the album's over, but I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, well, it shows there like a minute and 30 seconds somewhere like that left. I'm like, what do they got in surprise for us? And you hear that alarm clock, and you know, wake up. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the song is about sleep paralysis. Sorry, as you mentioned at the start of the episode. And I guess it's a phenomenon that has happened for centuries, where somebody, where it's been documented by countless people, and it's like you see a shadow man or the hat man, it says, in your room or whatever. So you might want to sleep with your light on tonight, is what it says. Yes.
You beat me to it. I was going to drop that line in there. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe leave a light on tonight is what it's saying. Okay, so that's the album. So in general, now you wrote a review, of course, and you gave it 9 out of 10. Now I'm not going to rate it because I don't think I've listened to it enough to rate it. If I had to rate it, I would give it like a 9. But I would need more time to whether am I going to keep listening to this for years to come, like I would Images and Words or Awake or whatever. Or is it going to be something where next year I never listen to it again? So that's really going to count into what I would rate the album. But on a first listen or first few listens, yes, it's really good. And it's, like I say, one of the heavier ones they've had in a while, where the whole thing is pretty heavy, except for your ballad or semi-ballad, whatever you want to call it. But okay, so we're going to finish off. Now, we've talked about seeing Dream Theater live. So if you want to hear those, any of that stuff, go to our other episode on Images and Words that we did, me and Eric did. And we talked about the first time we heard Dream Theater and probably seeing them live. So, but I'm not going to repeat it on another episode, not with the same person. If it was on with somebody else, then we might get into it. But, and we were trying to figure out how to, a list to do to finish off the episode, excuse me. But it's kind of, we thought about doing top 10 Dream Theater songs of all time, but it was going to be kind of hard to do, or maybe top 10 Dream Theater albums, maybe, which is something we could do sometime. And I'm sure we will do an episode on the album Awake, because I know me and Eric both like that album a lot. So maybe we'll do top 10 songs then. But for this list, we're just going to rank the songs on this album, which again comes out this Friday, February 7th. It comes out. So we're going to rank the songs we just talked about in the order of preference. So I guess I'll let you go first.
All right. So I'm going to go with, it's no surprise, I'm going to go with number 8, Are We Dreaming? You know, again, it's just more of a transition song. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's a short track, and, you know, it serves its purpose. Do you want me to jump down like 7 down to 1, or were you going to go?
Yeah, you can go back. Yeah, go
keep
ahead.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Got it. So, number 7, In the Arms of Morpheus. I always love Dream Theater's instrumental, so it feels a little bit foreign to me to have it this low. But I think it's just the sole reason. And obviously, we've talked about these songs, so I'm going to try to not carry on too much about the songs. But I absolutely love this album, if you can't tell. But it was a little hard for me. I listened to my number 6 and number 7 songs right before this podcast. So you want to talk about preparation, I'm ready. So it's just that number 6, Bend the Clock, was like such a great, well-written ballad. And man, it's just so musical. And the band just, you know, they're really hitting on all cylinders, even though that probably sounds funny talking about a slower song, but it's just that you can definitely tell like their chemistry, the songwriting. It's got some heart. I like the lyrics are, I didn't really touch on the lyrics you did, but yeah, they definitely have like some positive vibes, and it's kind of more kind of reflecting, oh, how would life be if, you know, you didn't have these, you know, sleep paralysis or sleep disorders, how life would be better for you. And, you know, actually be a little more awake and a little more energized each day. So I factor even in the lyrics on that one. I like both of those tracks. So Bend the Clock was number six. Number five, this was, I guess it's all kind of tricky for me. Midnight Messiah is really cool. Number four, Night Terror. That one, I think that one's like, I guess it can't be sentimental because I only heard it maybe a month ago or so. But Night Terror is just like that first single. And I was like, oh, I really like the direction the band's going with this single. And like the album's likely going to be a bit darker. And that's a great tune. A Broken Man is number three for me. It's got a lot of heaviness, darkness to it. The riffing is super intense. Dead Asleep could be my favorite, but you know, I love just the absolute bone rattling riffs of baritone, and the whole band sounds like they brought it. Again, I would think that you're lying about the length of the song, but you're looking at the track, you know, the track listing and the track time length. To me, it feels like maybe a 5 or 6 minute song, so that tells you how much I like it. Number one, Shadow Man Incident. It's almost a prerequisite, like it's required almost for me to like the epic number one. Again, the chorus is kind of like a little more kind of more positive and uplifting, but it does kind of fit the mold of the song. They do definitely cover so many different like emotions, pardon me, chord progressions. The soloing's great, the riffing's amazing. James is on top of his game. There are a lot of like highs and lows in the song. So they really cover the gamut here, that's probably the main reason I like the song so much. Part of it is I like these adventures, these longer songs. They have to go somewhere, and this song certainly does. They cover a lot of ground. So Shadow Man Incident, and lyrics are pretty interesting too. That's my number one. Blake, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. So me ranking the top eight, well, my bottom three are the exact same three as Eric. So I had Are We Dreaming, the number eight, and In the Arms of Morpheus, number seven, both the instrumentals. And it's not that I like instrumentals, but the one, like you say, is just a 2 minute one leading into another song. So that's going to be the least favorite, because I guess we could have even done without that on the album. We're still going to love the album without that. Mm-hmm. And the first, In the Arms of Morpheus, it's a good song, good instrumental. It's just, I don't know, it's such a good album that I think it just falls down to number seven and eight. And number six, I have Bend the Clock. And it's just, you know, it's a ballad, semi-ballad, but I still like it. But again, I like all the other songs better. So my first one that's different from you is my number five, which I have a Broken Man. I have that one there. And number four matched you also with Night Terror as my number four. And my number three, I got Dead Asleep. Now, okay, my number three is Dead Asleep, and number two is The Shadow Man Incident. Now, I love both of those. Like, they could have been switched 2 to 3, whatever, like, because I love both of those, both the long songs. But my number one, I did pick the 7 minute, the short one, Midnight Messiah. As it, I don't know, it just, but again, this is like, you know, it's one day. If I did this tomorrow, you know, Dead Asleep might be number one, or Shadow Man Incident might be number one. But yeah, I got Midnight Messiah as my favorite track on the album, at least from the first few listens. But I'm sure I'll listen to it more, and who knows, it might be all different. Okay. So that was that. So yeah, like we say, Dream Theater, this is the first time we ever did a new album on a podcast episode. So maybe, like I say, leave us your comments or email me your comments if you like us talking about an album that hasn't come out yet. Now, it's like you have to listen to this podcast within the next couple of days to hear it before you hear the album. So it just kind of depends. And you might not want to listen to the episode till after you hear the album, because I guess, I don't, spoiler alert, we can't play the music or anything, so you're not hearing the music, you're just hearing what we think, and you might think something totally different. So
that's the beauty of music. Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, we both like the album, and we're big Dream Theater fans, and Hopefully we're both going to get to see them this year, maybe. I'm not positive I'm going to see them this year, but I'm hoping maybe I do. But yeah, so anyway, we thought we'd do something a little different. Make sure if you want to check out Eric's review, written review, check out our website, themetalpit.org. And make sure you also look for my review on Canadian thrash band Sacrifice, their first album in 16 years. That was just posted. And one of our new writers, Matthew, who wrote a review of the Finnish band Void Fallen. So check those three new reviews out on their website. And I guess that's it. Eric, you have anything to finish on?
The only thing I would say is, if you're listening to this podcast right now, brace yourself for Friday, February 7th. You're going to be in for a treat, regardless of whether you use Spotify, iTunes, or something else. Maybe buy the actual album or CD. I think you're going to like this one, especially if you like the heavy Dream Theater. You're really going to enjoy this one. That's what got me super excited about this one.
Yes, me too. And yeah, I love that it's kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, old school, but it definitely takes you back, some of it. Not that they've lost any of their heaviness over the years. It's just, this is even heavier, than even Images and Words Are Awake, because they still had multiple ballads in there. So this is probably the heaviest Dream Theater album ever, probably. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the best, but it's, at least for us, it's a great album. So make sure you get it Friday or listen to it, like Eric said, on Spotify or whatever. And we thank everybody for listening. Thanks, Eric, for joining me.
Thanks a ton for the idea, Blake, and I appreciate the invite, man. It was a great time.
Okay, and thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.